How's the tour going?
Well, it's not really a tour. What we're doing is we go out pretty much, I'd say on the average, it's been lately about once a week or so. And because we're working on a new album, we're writing new songs. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of new songs in the set. And we love to play them as opposed to just working on them in rehearsal and then going into the studio. I've always found it always sounds much better if you get them on the road, play them live a lot, play them in front of people, in front of your audience, see how the crowd likes them, see how the band, they work on their parts. The parts change from the time you write them to usually what winds up on the album, to some degree, you know. So it's always good to kind of break them in like that. So that's what we're doing, basically.
Actually, before we started, we were talking about, you were just introduced to college basketball. I saw the right. ESPN stuff. There was the New York Times article about the UConn women when they were in the championship. You've been a sports fan for a long time, I know. How come it took so long to get introduced to college basketball, being from two great basketball towns?
Well, I guess one thing was that, let me say first, I am a college basketball fan and have been for years. I have watched it whenever it's been on TV. It's just that I suppose the fact that it hasn't really been, I guess, widely available, and the fact that, you know, I never went to college. I don't have an affiliation with anybody, so, and I moved around a lot when I was a kid, so it was hard to sort of really
find an allegiance.
Find an allegiance on that level. It was easier for me to find an allegiance with major league teams, I guess. You know, I just wasn't that entrenched in the community to get that involved with college, you know, or even high school. I mean, to any degree. I was like a street ball player, dodgeball and kickball and that kind of sports, you know, because, you know, at 15 I was in a band, you know, so school sports really didn't happen for me.
Speaking of being in a band when you were 15, I was checking out on the internet, doing my research, and there's a whole Runaways thing going on the internet, which I guess you may be aware of, I don't know.
But what do you mean?
Well, there's a Runaways website, and
I hadn't really heard about it.
And there's like everybody's autobiography from the band, and stuff that you said probably when you were 15. I mean, this sounds like stuff when we were 15 that you might say, questions that were in the fan magazines. It's like a Runaways sort of revival on the web, and every once in a while on a radio station you'll hear a Runaways song. Does that surprise you that it's happening like that?
Very pleasantly so. I mean, if that's the case, I guess I don't really see it that much. I'm not really on the computer at all. I'm not computer literate, because, you know, I don't really choose
to. You're on the road
all
the time.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people, I suppose, that are in bands that do get into it. But no, I haven't really been that aware of it. But that's great. You know, that makes me feel good that finally maybe some people are paying attention. That's nice.
You were asked a question in an interview that I read that I guess was not that long ago about the Runaways and being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That was interesting to me because this week's New York Magazine, an article called Feminism Rocks, which, by my definition, didn't do what it should because it completely ignores everything that came before most of the artists today. They only mentioned Chrissy Hynde as someone who has influenced what's going on today, when, in fact, by my judgment, the Runaways and Susie Quattro, who I know you listened to when you were younger, really got women in rock and roll going beyond the girl group kind of thing. Does it bother you that you're not getting, that the Runaways or you as an individual don't get credit for what's happening now?
Well, the individual part doesn't bother me. I certainly don't expect to be, you know, singled out by any means. But the fact the Runaways don't get recognized definitely bothers me. But I'm so used to it, you know? I mean, it's been happening since I was in the band that we always really got really looked down on, sort of, you know, not recognized as doing anything. And I know, to some degree, a large degree, that had to do with being girls and being teenage girls. You know, people had a problem with the fact we were female, and then they had a bigger problem with the fact that we were young and we did what we wanted. And I think that a lot of the industry had a problem because they perceived us as being a put-together thing, a Kim Fowley situation or something, a Svengali'd band, and that just, it's just not true, you know what I mean? And, what can I really say about that? You know, it's like I can't really prove that to people. It's just, it's the truth. And some if they choose not to believe that, that's just tough.
And Jillian Gere's book, She's a Rebel, which is a history of rock and roll women, and then the Rolling Stone Encyclopedia of Rock, there's always been this murky kind of thing about the origins of the band, but you've been very consistent in saying, hey, you know, we put the band
together.
Oh, yeah,
totally, totally. Yeah. I mean, and the story is the story, and, you know, I mean, want me to tell it one more time? It is what
no,
it is.
No. Okay. You've told it enough.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of redundant.
One thing that I thought was interesting in the some of the revised stuff that's coming out, like the very new latest edition of the Rolling Stone Encyclopedia of Rock, it's the first time I saw anything that said the Runaways were probably a bit ahead of their time for what you were trying to do then. I mean, back in the early 70s.
Right.
There weren't any rock and roll, straight out rock head rock and roll women doing full bands. I mean, the Bangles and everything came later.
Right. I mean, it's nice that they say that. There were a few writers that were pretty cool to us. Usually that was in England. You know, it was NME or Sounds or one of those magazines, Melody Maker. But
the British were always a little bit ahead of the trend.
Well, I think the whole punk rock scene in the late 70s was a lot more open to women. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, especially in England, you had, you know, Susie and the Banshees, you had the Slits, you had, Polly and Polystyrene, you know, so, and a gay advert from the adverts. I mean, they were just, it was just sort of, that was part of punk. It was sort of, well, there haven't really been women in rock music, so, and there, you know, punk rock was to mess up the establishment. It was a big part of it.
Well, it was like
Sex
Pistols.
To go against convention, totally, so... Women playing music was just natural, and people in England didn't look at it as being strange at all.
And the Sex Pistols at that time, because I remember back then when I was covering that, when it started,
right.
And saw the Sex Pistols in one of their second or third thing before they blew up in the U.S., it was just different, and it was so aggressive that it just didn't make sense, I guess, maybe to people here, that there would be women wanting to do that kind of music.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I'd have to see what kind of reaction other, you know, like the English punk rock got in American circles and just see. Yeah, I guess Americans just couldn't deal with it. I don't know what their problems were. I really don't. I don't get it.
Well, now it seems that they've got it, or they have for some time. And one of the things that in looking back and listening to the records that you've made over the years, CDs now, of course, You were not afraid to do material by other people as well as your own stuff, because a lot of what was going on then was you got to write your own stuff and perform your own stuff, but you've never been afraid to do that.
Right.
Any particular reason why? Just admiration of other artists, or just you happen to like the tunes?
Well, I think it's probably a couple of things. I think it's great to be a serious artist, but I don't want to be so caught up in myself and be so sort of, I've got to write all the material. You know, that to me, that's just not what music's about. It's great to express yourself, and if you've got two or three albums worth of material, great, you know? But if it's not up to par, up to what you feel that you want to release to the world, that's another thing. I mean, I might have a million songs, and I'm just not, you know, I just don't think they're great enough, or they're not finished, they say something, but they're not complete. And I think that music is to have a good time, and if you get off on hearing other people's music or interpreting it, I think that's part of rock and roll. I mean, why not? You know, and I think a lot of people do have problems with covering material to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. They feel like they've got to write their own stuff, and I don't know if I felt like that early on in my career. I just can't really remember.
At the same time, for the style of music that you're generally known for and that you do, you've also maintained harmony, melody. I mean, you really can hear different things going on in a Joan Jett album. There's songs like Brighter Day, which you wrote, and Celluloid Hero, your version of that, Love Hurts. Is that a conscious thing, or is this just comes out like that, that you really, you put a package together.
Well, you mean just with this,
the you know, song? Doing ballads, I mean, the way that you do them. I mean, is it a break from the hard, aggressive stuff, or just, it's just there?
Yeah, well, I guess it always has been. We have at least one sort of, I guess you'd call it a ballad, that will be on the next album, I would think. And I don't know how that's going to turn out. I hear it the way I hear it live, and I'd like to hear it like that on record, but I don't know what's going to enter into it once you get in the studio. You know, when you start hearing harmonies and things like that, you just don't know where it's going to go. And I guess that's the advantage of being a live band, is that you get a chance to get into the studio, give one sort of basic interpretation of the song, which is pretty consistent with what you do live, but unless you want to run tapes and stuff, which I don't, you know, I just kind of want to be organic and what it is. Four guys on stage, four people. And, you know, so it gives a couple different moods.
Someone once told me, who I was interviewing, I think it was Arlo Guthrie, he said, I don't like making records, you got to do them good. I'd rather just play, just sing.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different times that you do, I think, really good versions of songs. I know a million times I've, you know, played gigs and said, man, that just felt great. You know, a certain song or several songs, and even though they're basically the same, maybe you just, it's the way you sung it, there was something you played, and it's just, there's so many different feelings that you can get out of a song. And then there's also, you can have really bad nights, you know, where it just is sort of has nothing. You know, it's like you go, oh my God, where's the passion? There's nothing there, you know? And luckily that doesn't happen very often at all.
It was interesting watching the sound check just before, because you were doing some different things, trying to figure out a couple of different arrangements, I presume, to a new song. You do a lot of that adjusting each night and then sort of stick with it, or do you try and do a little ebb and flow every night?
I think what you're probably referring to, I was just messing around this sort of chant thing. It's an Indian kind of chant, and I was just put it to guitar music, because it just gets boring saying check one two, you know, just, so I had to play my guitar. I have to hear how loud it is on stage. I mean, sound check, you know. So I wanted to sing and then hear the level. So that's all I was doing instead of
singing.
What
about the sound check? A lot of people don't know what goes on with that. They come in, some people may come in and they just hear, you know, a lot of things going on. Is that something it's routine. It's something that has to be done every night. But you're trying to make it a little bit more interesting, I guess, by at least playing the guitar and fooling around.
Yeah, well, I mean, some bands don't do sound checks. Some bands just go and set up, you know, they're just not into, I don't know. You know, I guess I want to know everything's going to sound right and kind of know what to expect. I hope when I get on stage, kind of case the joint, you know, look at the theater or the club or whatever it is, venue, whatever the venue is. Just check it out, see how far away I'm going to be from the people, how low or high the stage is. It's just sort of a
acclimation.
Yeah, you just have to get used to it. And then, you know, I mean, there's definitely times that you don't get sound checks. You know, certain, if you play festivals, there's a lot of bands on them, you won't get a sound check, most likely, unless, you know, it depends on the situation. So sometimes you just have to wing it. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of getting the sound. Different bands do different things. We go through about three songs or so.
One of the things that has always been interesting about looking at your background is you've had to really struggle sometimes to get forward. The Runaways didn't have critical success or commercial success in the United States, so you went to Japan. It took a lot of time for you to get a deal as a solo, and then you went out. And then now with the ESPN thing with Love Is All Around, and everybody knows who Joan Jett is again, in a larger way. Does it ever get you down that sometimes it's hard in this business, or did you just accept it and just say, okay, we got to do it?
Well, I guess you can't ever really get too down. I think I'm real lucky. You know, I mean, I'm really lucky. I get to be in a rock and roll band. It's something I dreamed about being when I was 13, and I made it happen by the time I was 15. I mean, yeah, I can't complain. Even when, you know, things you figure aren't going so great, I'm just really lucky. I can't complain. And things have been, for the most part, regardless of what the public sees, you know, because people's perception and the way the media puts things, you know, it's like if you've got a top 40 record, you're happening. If you don't have a top 40 record, everybody's like waiting for the next thing, when really it's all relative. If we're always out there rocking every year, whether or not we got top 40 or not, you know, so it's just a matter of kicking butt all the time and always showing the audience that you care, no matter what's happening. So that's all you can do.
From here, you're going to California, I know, and yeah. Some other dates. When is this? Is the record almost done in the studio, or are you still recording in between?
No, we're still
between?
Working on it, yeah. I would figure it would be summer sometime, but it's too hard to project, so I don't want to put any dates on it.
What about beyond that? You know, the record will be done, another formal big tour?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, that's usually the way it goes with us. So, yeah, I would want to do that, full American tour and hopefully around the world and then a vacation.
Okay, well, that sounds like good to me. Well, we appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure.